Now, in the US, there's a growing outrage over the murder of more than a dozen African-American people in alleged racial killings. The issue was brought to the spotlight after a black teenager was shot dead in Florida in February. The black community is angry at the police and the authorities for failing to bring those responsible to justice. There's also growing concern in the country about the police's mistreatment against the Muslim community. Well, joining me now live from New York is Haj Malcolm El Shabazz, the grandson of Malcolm X. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us. The first question that I put to you, if you can hear me now, is speaking since the murder of your grandfather, Malcolm X, how deep-rooted is the issue of racism still in the United States?
The issue of racism is very deep-rooted. It's something that's ingrained within the culture of the people and the politics of the society of this nation.
So basically, the issue is what we know, for one, Mr. El Shabazz, that the U.S. is now seeing an African-American president. It's now seeing an African-American attorney general. Why hasn't this changed the situation? Rather, do you think that it has had an effect on the situation for African-Americans?
As far as the presidency, me personally, I don't believe in the presidency. I believe that the presidency post in the United States is nothing more than a puppet post. And when we see movements like the Occupy movement, where you have the 99% fighting against that 1%, it's not about color. It's about that minority which keeps control of the majority. When Bill Clinton became president, many black people considered Bill Clinton to be the first black president. Why? Because he smoked a little weed, he played the saxophone, he had the situation in the White House with Monica Lewinsky, many things that they feel appeal to black people. United States is the land of smoke and mirrors, and they're very good at what they do. For all these reasons, people considered Bill Clinton to be the first black president, but during Bill Clinton's administration, there were more black people, people of color, incarcerated at an all-time Guinness Book World Records height than during any other administration before him. So it's not really a case of whether you're black or you're white, it's a case of that minority that keeps control of the majority. There's no difference between Bush, Clinton, Obama. They're all the same. They had Bush out here and they gave him free rein to do whatever it is that he wanted to do. The people were ready to rebel against Bush. We had the most people of color that ever registered to vote in history to get him out. You had entertainers, you had politicians, you had musicians. Everyone was speaking out against Bush, yet he was still able to become president. And, you know, it's very interesting. I don't even know anyone that voted for Bush. But here it is, we have Obama, and Obama is doing the exact same thing as Bush and every other president that came before him. There's no difference between a Democrat or a Republican, and we make no distinction between one president or another. All they did was put a black face on imperialism. People were ready to rebel because of the actions of Bush. They put that black face up there, and everybody fell back and became passive. So it's smoke and mirrors.
Mr. Shabazz, you're a Muslim yourself, and you speak about minorities, religious minorities, especially Muslims in America, are bearing the brunt of the post-9/11 policies at home, at least. Muslims in particular are depicted as foreigners and homegrown terrorists, and they're being spied upon solely on the basis of their religion. How difficult is it to be a Muslim in America?
It's not difficult. I mean, we just need to stay true to what we believe in. I remember not too long ago in Florida where they had a pastor of a church and he had a campaign to burn the Quran. It was a Quran burning campaign. And many people, when they began to burn the Quran, many Muslims were upset and they were outraged and they wanted to take action. But my thing is that if anybody has the gall to burn the Quran, then we don't need to take any action against them. Their retribution will come from Allah, God himself. But the thing is, when many people started to burn this Quran, people from all over the country, they said, wow, they're burning the Quran? Why are they burning the Quran? What's in the Quran? So many people who didn't know too much about the Quran, when they started this Quran burning day, It compelled a lot of people to open it up and see what was within it. And all praise be to God, because of this, many people became Muslim. Just like 9/11, Muslims didn't do 9/11. Muslims had nothing to do with 9/11. If you even research it, you see that everything that was utilized in order for 9/11 to take place pointed right back to the United States. Even the training that they received, the flight training, they received it here in the United States, the visas from the United States, everything, the airplanes that they used, everything came from the United States. And Muslims, we don't take action like this. Anybody to take such an action against civilians, we already know are not Muslims. Many of the people who were involved in 9/11 itself were actually agents for the United States, whether it be CIA or whatever three-letter organizations that they have that exist within this country. But many times, Allah, he says that he will use the enemies of Islam in order to promote the religion. So many times they try to attack us. They try to use false flag operations to make it seem as if we're involved in activities, which we are really not, to deceive the people, to get them to turn away from us. But it actually helps us.
And we know, Mr. Shahbaz, the brutal killing of Trayvon Martin recently in the U.S., and that gave a lot of cause for people to take out to the streets to protest because of similar instances involving teenage African-Americans who were murdered by white men or security forces or police. Basically, do you think that this is the beginning, the start of a popular movement, a growing popular movement in the U.S. against racism? Do you see that happening in the U.S.?
I mean, well, this isn't anything that's new with the Trayvon Martin case. You know, my heart goes out to him and his family. May Allah have mercy upon his soul. But this isn't anything that's new. And this isn't an isolated incident. There are hundreds of Trayvon Martin incidences that are taking place all throughout the country. But many times the mainstream media here within the United States, they keep these issues localized and they don't report it to the rest of the public. So they make it seem as if when an incident like this happens, it only happens within your own community. Many people in Florida or in the East Coast might be familiar with Trayvon Martin. They might not be familiar with Oscar Grant in Oakland, California, who was murdered on the BART station with his handcuffs behind his back. He was handcuffed behind his back and they murdered him. They might not be familiar with Kenneth Harding in Texas. And those in Texas familiar with Kenneth Harding might not be familiar with the imam who was murdered by the federal government in Michigan. Those in Michigan familiar with that case might not be familiar with Bell, Louima, or Diallo in New York. You had Bell, he was coming home from a bachelor party. Him and his friends, they got in the car, they were unarmed. The police converged on the vehicle and let off 40-something shots. One officer emptied his clip, reloaded, and continued to shoot. You had another brother, they stuck a plunger up his rectum. The police didn't do any time, they got off. You had another brother, he was an African immigrant here in New York, and the police had stopped him. He went in his pocket to get his wallet. They shot him 27 times. When he was on the ground, they continued to shoot. So the Trayvon Martin incident, the Oscar Grant incident, these incidences are not isolated incidences. There are hundreds of black men that are being murdered all over the United States of America every year, with impunity. And the police officers, they serve no time. They always get off.
Well, the U.S. prison population, Mr. Shahbaz, stands at 2.3 million people, which is the largest worldwide. However, black males, which represent the largest percentage, about 40% of the population, they form only 12% of the national population. A black male is seven times more likely to be imprisoned than a white male. That's according to estimates. Why are so many African Americans in prison, and what's the underlying reason for this situation?
I mean, it's a continuation of institutionalized racism. See, what happened, they didn't have so many prisons here in the United States during slavery. And when they so-called abolished slavery, that's when they came up with this prison industrial complex. The United States has more people incarcerated than anywhere else in the world. If it has more people incarcerated than China. And China has the most people in the world. Matter of fact, if you were to take the prison population and all the other countries of the world and you were to combine them together, I don't think it would equal the amount of people who are incarcerated here in the United States of America. It's correct. The so-called African-American makes up less than 12% of the population of the United States. Yet no matter what state you go to, you'll see that the majority of the prisoners within any prison population, the majority of them are black and Hispanic. And in these institutions, people are forced to work for pennies on a dollar. If you look at the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution, it says that slavery is abolished except for those who serve within these penal institutions. So technically, by the book, those who are in prison are considered to be slaves, and that's why they can be forced to work for a minimum wage, which is less than the minimum wage here in the United States.
And Mr. Shahbaz, when you say that the racism against black people, African Americans, is institutionalized, what basically should be done in your view? What's the move that should be taken by the population, by African Americans, by those who are concerned about racism to stop this from happening or to force the government to act?
I mean, my grandfather once equated revolution to a forest fire, and he stated that the goal of the revolution was that, like the forest fire, where the forest fire, it ravages the forest completely. He said that needs to be the goal of the revolution, where we take down the system completely and we set up one of our own, which is more just. We live in a society here in America where there's an upper, middle, and a lower class. And as long as there's an upper, middle, and lower class, that means that there's somebody going to be on the top, somebody's always going to be on the bottom, and somebody's always going to be on the middle. If black people or Hispanic people or whatever group that is being discriminated against was to move from the bottom to the middle or from the middle to the top, that just means that there's another group of people that would have to replace that bottom. So this is something that we need to take in consideration and realize. And the people that are going to stay on the bottom are always going to be people of color, because we're the easiest to be discriminated against because of the color of our skin. We can't blend in like Jews or Italians and what
have you. Right, Mr. Shahbaz, unfortunately,
first and foremost, this is something that we need to
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, and I'd just like to hear from you in 30 seconds, if you can, as the last question. Do you think that we're going to see a black uprising in America, rather the civil rights movement joining the 99%ers in America? What are you expecting?
I don't know what to expect, but I know that there are uprisings going on all throughout the world, whether it be Egypt, Tunisia, Libya, Syria. We have these so-called uprisings, these so-called revolutions, and many times the Occupy movement here in the United States. And my one problem is that I can't identify any central leadership or a governing body, and I have a problem with that. And what I advise the people to do, one of the things that my grandfather stated, is that you should never join a movement unless you're completely aware of what that movement is about. Because a lot of times we have outside forces that orchestrate these movements and get us to do things that we wouldn't ordinarily do. Just like with the Occupy movement, from one day to the next, how do they know what's going on or what's the next action to be taken? They look at it in the news. In the news, it says, all right, tomorrow the movement is going to be over here. We're going to mobilize over there. But where is it coming from? It's coming through the media. And the media is a tool that the enemy uses in order to control, manipulate, and mold the popular opinion of the masses. So one thing I could just say is for people to be very leery of the movements they join and the actions that they take.
Thank you very much. Live in New York, Haj Malcolm Al-Shahbaz, Malcolm X's grandson. Thank you so much for being with us, sir.